to the forum for Holden for this evening. And I invite any of you who want to participate to share. We're going to have a very serious topic tonight, but a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. I ran into an old friend of mine who is a Lutheran pastor who is now at a church in northern Wisconsin. And Fred was a very interesting character. We went to undergraduate school together, and he had to finish at the State University and just needed 3 credits to graduate. He was working part-time. He wanted to get done so that he could get on to seminary. And so what he decided to do was to sign up, pre-register for a course in ornithology, study of birds. And he had a professor for that course that he knew about by reputation who would pass anybody who would show up in the room. The fellow was just ready to quit. He had told all he knew about birds, and he didn't care anymore. I think some of you may have had professors like that in school. So Fred signed up for it. And that was in the spring. He had to go back for the fall semester. And during the summer, unfortunately, the professor died. He was really on his last time. And the university hired a new man to teach in some of those related fields. And what they did was to hire a young man who decided that the most important course that anyone could take in the world would be ornithology. That if you knew birds, you would have everything set. Fred walked into class, found out about the new man very quickly, decided, well, maybe I can make it through. And at the end of the first week, the professor decided that he would say, try a quiz to see how people were going. He already had them go through about 8 chapters, detailed work on birds. So Fred thought, well, okay, I'll go in and take a look at the test. Got the test questions. When he got them, it had pictures of the legs and feet of 20 different birds. And it said, identify by proper name, by Latin name, and by common name what these birds are. So he took a look, and he started to fiddle around. For any of you who have gone into a test and realized it's over before you start, kind of looked, thought he might guess, tried to remember what it was like looking at a robin out the window in the spring, see if he could remember what the legs were. Finally, he gave up, and he decided that he was going to give up at that point, even on the whole course. So he took the paper, and he just took it with him. He walked past the desk where the professor was kind of monitoring everybody and just threw it down on his desk. And he said, this is unfair. I'm leaving. He started walking out. And the professor, who had received an insult to his whole life at that point, yelled at him as he went out the door. He said, you can't do that. You can't do that. And Fred said, yes, I can. And the professor said, young man, what's your name? Fred turned to look at him and said, you tell me. Fred also, at that point, then applied for a job. He wanted to teach part-time after he received his undergraduate degree and then went to seminary. He wanted to teach part-time, and the only seminary that would even look at him was a very strong fundamentalist Bible Belt seminary where you didn't need any experience, but if you had a degree, all the better for them. They could put that, they didn't have a catalog, they just dittoed off sheets and handed it out and hoped people would come. So they sent out a resume, an application, And on that application, as Fred was filling it out, he listed all different things in the background, and then he got to the question from this seminary that said, do you drink? He looked at that and said, do you smoke? He looked at that and said, do you swear? He looked at that. And he knew that he would have to be honest and say yes to all three of those, and that it might mean never being considered for that job. But he decided to do it, but he added a footnote. He said, yes, I do all of these, but not well enough to teach them. And before running into Fred out here at Holden Village, I didn't know he was going to be here during the time that we were here. But I hadn't seen him since about the first time that he went up to this little town up in northwestern Wisconsin, which is in a very strong Scandinavian area. And it was, in fact, a little community called West Sweden. And he took Pilgrim Lutheran Church in West Sweden and thought this would be a good place. He accepted their call, and they seemed happy with him. So he went up there, and he went into the church. It wasn't a very large church. And the first thing that struck him when he went into the church to take over that pastorate was that the illumination in the sanctuary was just awful. You could barely see. It was about like reading at Vespers tonight for that first part of the service if you were back under the balcony. The illumination was really tough on you. So he decided that the first thing that they needed to do was to buy a new chandelier for the sanctuary. So a couple weeks after he was there, and it was the meeting of the church board, and he raised the question. He said, I really think it's important to buy a chandelier for the sanctuary. And nobody said anything. And he said, well, could you at least vote on it? And the chairman of the board said, yeah, Pastor. Yeah, we can vote on it if you want to. So he said, okay. So the man said, all those in favor of a new chandelier, vote aye. And there was no hand raised whatsoever. All those in favor of not having a chandelier vote nay. And everybody's hand went up on the board. And Fred just couldn't quite understand that. He went home, stayed up half the night with his wife saying, honey, I want to succeed so much in this new parish, it's awful. So he decided, well, the church meeting with the whole congregation is going to be coming up in a couple weeks. So I thought what he'd do is do it then, and so he raised the issue before the whole congregation. And the president of the council then said, all those in favor of the new chandelier, will you please say aye? No one except Fred and his wife raised their hands. They looked around. All those opposed, say nay. Whole congregation. Well, they went home after that meeting. And Fred, being very intense, again anxious to succeed in the new parish, said, I just can't figure it out, honey. I really have to deal with this. So first thing he got up the next morning, he got in his car and went over to where the president of the council was doing his chores, walked on in. He was just finishing up. He was in the barn. And Fred went in, and he said, Ole, I hate to say anything, but I haven't been able to sleep all night. Everybody here has been so gracious to me, and yet the only thing I have really asked for, that new chandelier, has been 100% against me, and no one with me except my wife. And I really want to be straight with you and ask you, please be honest with me. What's wrong? So Ole looked at Fred and said, well, the problem is with the new chandelier. in the first place, the sure secretary can't spell chandelier. In the second place, we got no one in the church who can play it. And in the third place, we're saving our money for some new lights. Fred is getting some coffee, and he'll be coming down the hill in a minute. In the meantime, if any of you have any stories, real or unreal, feel free to jump in. This is an evening of swapping stories.
If you want to stay in the church, when I was going to St. Olaf College, I remember one story from those years, and that was a story that Olaf Christensen shared with us from his experience. And St. Olaf sort of came out of the ELC, and the ELC was not exactly known for liturgical propriety. And there was, however, one pastor who wanted his church to be much more liturgical. And so he was devising all sorts of forms that they might use and all sorts of different kind of chants they might have. And the congregation accepted everything. It went very well, and the church was flourishing and growing. Then he thought maybe, and I'll follow this story because of our service tonight, of evening prayer. There is a portion in that service where we could have added even a little bit more, and that is actually had some incense. And so the pastor thought he would introduce that to his congregation. And he called the acolyte and he said, suppose you come over on Saturday night, we'll have a little rehearsal. And so the acolyte came over on Saturday night and they rehearsed, and oh, it went so well. He couldn't go to sleep because he was so excited. It had gone so well. Got up in the morning, hardly waited to get to church. And they were going to have this service and they were going to have some incense. Well, it came time on Sunday morning for this service when they were going to have the incense. And nothing happened. And so, wanting to be liturgically correct, he chanted to the little acolyte, "What did you do with the incense pot?"
"I dropped it on the floor. It was too damn hot."
When you were talking about grades, it reminded me of the time I was teaching at the University of Wisconsin. It was during the Vietnam War. And one of my students came up to me and said, "Professor Ebenhard, I have to get a C in this course, or else I'll be on the boat." And I said, "If you deserve an A, I'll have to give it to you."
Paul, have you got some Georgia stories?
Harvey asked me a couple days ago, he said, "Come to this thing Wednesday night, and if you've got a story, you can tell it." Yes, I've got a story, but it isn't true life, and, well, I'll just go ahead and tell it. It lasts a little bit of time, so please bear with me. If you think I'm taking too long, you can gong me or whatever. But it's a joke. It's a joke. The joke is about boats.
Oh, no.
I think, have you already heard it? It starts off with a real, real poor man. He was very undernourished and everything. And he's walking up the road. He looks in his pocket. All he has left is a quarter. And he says, "Well, let me spend it on some food." So he goes in the grocery store. I'll kind of bring it home. He goes in the bookstore here, and he buys 3 apples for a quarter, because that's all he's got left. He eats the second apple. No, he eats the first apple. Takes the coin, throws it away. He eats the second apple. Licks the corn, throws it away. This is a joke about boats. Bites into the third apple, and out pops a worm. Well, he says, this worm doesn't deserve to die, just like I don't, you know. So he crams the worm in his pocket. He walks on down the road here. A little while later, he's walking up towards Chalet Hill, you know, and he sees a sign, and the way people are weird around here, it kind of makes sense for what goes on around here, but it's kind of a new thing to him. The sign says, worm race, you know. Village worm race, you know, on Saturday, and it was Saturday. So, it's up at Chalet 10. He walks on up to Chalet 10 and pulls out the worm in his pocket. This is a joke about boats. He pulls the worm out of his pocket, enters the worm in the race. The race is one lap around Chalet 11, you know, up on the hill there. And he enters one, the prize is $10, you know. And a lot of worms, everybody here, they've been taking craft courses and worms, they've been having sessions on worm racing and everything. And so everybody has a worm. So they all line up on the starting line. the bell fires. And they're off, you know. A lap around Chalet 11. Well, lo and behold, the worm wins. And now the man's given the award, the $10. And so he says, wow, since this worm has given me this $10, I'll name this worm. And he thinks, and he says, I'll name him Motor. And so he puts Motor back in his pocket, and I guess he goes on down and boards the thing, because when he's down there, he hears about a district-wide worm race, you know? This is a joke about boats. it's Washington, Spokane. The worm race is in Spokane. So he goes over to Spokane. He wants to enter the worm race. The prize is $100, you know, and he's just about out of his $10, you know. So he enters Motor. It's a tough race, but Motor wins, you know. And he says, man, this is fantastic, Motor. Look what you're doing for me. This is a joke about boats. And so he takes Motor, and he's a Lutheran or whatnot, and he tries to stay on top of what's going on, you know, in current events, and he hears about a statewide worm race, and it's 10 laps around the state capital. Where's the state capital? Seattle? Okay. Yeah, there's one of them.
Celebrity folks there.
Oh, wait. It's a joke about boats. That's good. No, but he takes Motor to Olympia, you know, and it's 10 laps around the capital. He enters Motor. It's a tough race. But as you guessed it, motor on goes on to win. So now, and the prize was $1,000. You know, the man hears about a national worm race be held in Washington, D.C., you know, clear way over there. But this time it's 15 laps around the White House. No, this is pretty cyclical, Doug, you know, so you can make up the figures as you go along. It's a tough arm race again, but motor goes on to win. The prize is $1,000. And he says, this is real fantastic. Who started off with nothing? And then he's got $1,000 more. And he says, wow, motor, look at what all you... Look, this is a joke about boats. That is so important. But he says, motor, look at what all you've given me. You're so great a worm, motor. He hears about an international believe it or not, it's to be held in Rome, Italy. This time it's 50 laps around the cathedral there. And he says, well, I don't know. But I'll go on over there, and motor and I will go on over there and see, check it out, you know. So their fare cost him $500, and it cost, anyway, he uses almost all his money up in the expedition. But he takes motor on over there, and it's 50 laps around the cathedral. Remember, it's a joke about boats. Everybody else has heard about the famous motor, you know. So everybody else crawls their worm out of the race, except for this one man who's got a worm named Tinkerbell. Tinkerbell has a tack in its tail. You know, some people didn't think that was quite right, you know, to have a tack in Tinkerbell's tail. But nevertheless, Tinkerbell and Motor line up on the starting line, you know, the brick or whatever. And the gun goes off. And so they're neck and neck at it, really rushing around the cathedral there, you know. And about the 30th lap around the cathedral, Tinkerbell sneaks up behind Motor and stabs him, right in the side, you know. And Motor rolls over and they go, oh! And he just sits there in the gutter, you know, in pain, and Tinkerbell's making all these laps and everything. But after a few minutes, Motor thinks to himself and says, I can still make it, you know, so he rolls back over and he catches back up and Tinkerbell. And Motor ties a knot in himself, comes up behind Tinkerbell and strangles him, you know. Motor goes on to win the race. Yeah, performance is good. This is a joke about those. The prize was $1 million for winning the international race. But the man's, when Motor goes up, has won the race, man goes up to receive the $1 million check, and he loses Motor. And being the smart Lutheran that he was, he says, well, since Motor has given me this $1 million, I'll spend this $1 million looking for this worm. This is a joke about boats. So it goes all around the world, looks at every crevice, looking for motor, you know. 1 year, 2 years, 10 years later, he's back in the same old town. He spent everything, every down to his last dime, quarter. And he had never found motor. With tears in his eyes, he says, well, let me buy 3 more apples. This is a joke about boats. He eats the first apple, licks the core, and throws it away. He eats the second apple, licks the core, and throws it away. This is a joke about boats. He bites into the third apple, an outboard motor.
Do you have any other
I have a joke about trains.
Go ahead. No.
Somebody else takes to me. No, I don't.
Well, this one's almost as bad, but it doesn't take quite as long. But I've heard so much about Wisconsin, and I'm from Wisconsin, I think it's appropriate to enlighten some of the people about the Indian War in Wisconsin. And they believe very strongly in their religion, which as far as I know isn't Lutheran, that when a child is born, the type of animal skin that the child is laid out on imparts great powers and preordains some of the aspects of life. So there were 3 Indian women who were all pregnant at the same time. And this is a joke about engineers, you'll understand. So they laid the first Indian woman out on a deer skin, and she had a fine son. And they laid the second Indian woman out on a bear hide, and she had a fine son. And the third Indian woman was laid out on hippopotamus hide, and she had fine twin sons. But I can get through it. It just goes to prove once again that the sons of the squaw on the hippopotamus are equal to the sons of the squaw.
Other story. Yep.
I was working up on Cloudy Pass one day. The hiker came up and said, "Well, Ranger, you lived here all your life?" I said, "Not yet." Then he continued his line of questioning. "Where does this trail go?" "Oh, nowhere. It sits right where it is." "Well, how do I get to Image Lake?" "Don't know." "Well, which trail do I take to Image Lake?" "Don't know." "Ranger, you don't know much." "No, but I ain't lost." And as he headed off, I gave him one last word. Said, "And remember, only forest fires can prevent bears."
Exactly. Rudy, you get equal time on that.
Well, my wife, among the assignments I had in my Smokey Bear Association was to design a costume for a man to wear to wear as a weapon. And they'd go to fairgrounds and so on eventually. But my wife and I made the very first costume for Macy's Day Parade in New York in about 1948. And we had the furry material, and I made the head out of chicken wire and plaster and the nose, and I made the mouth so it would open up with a string. And she sewed the costume, and we had a pair of dungarees and belt. All he had to do, we had a regular Stetson hat for him, and I put Smokey on it, and he rode in a parade. This was the first use of Smokey in the costume. But at one time, a friend of mine was wearing this costume, and many people didn't like to wear it because it was so hot and uncomfortable. And one time we actually designed one with a little fan inside. But this friend of mine was we had a kind of a fair in Washington, and at some public gatherings like that, we had Smokey out there walking in the crowd and handing out little fire prevention gear and so on. And this little boy was watching Smokey walking around, very fascinated by him, and Smokey sat down on a rock nearby, and the little boy came up to it kind of cautiously. And finally he came out with a question. He said, "Smokey," he says, "why are you wearing shoes?" And Smokey kind of held his head back and looked at the boy and said, "Well, that's to cover my bare feet." So one of the funniest experiences I had in my working in Washington was I took the bus every morning, generally, and I always carried a briefcase. I had my lunch in it, and all my things that I carry along with me. And I'd go to a corner and catch the bus. Occasionally, I would get a ride from some friend who commuted. Not far, there was an automobile. And I'd appreciate that because I'd be down there quicker. And I had one ride with this friend of mine one time. And that morning I was walking up to my accustomed corner and I saw his car come up to the corner. Now, if you can visualize what's happened, this isn't a funny story, but it's a funny experience. For me, it was. The car comes up to the corner and the bus comes up right behind it. Now, the reason the car came up is because my friend was in here and his wife. I didn't see his wife right away at the corner because I was coming up with a crowd of people around, but I hurried up then because I thought I was going to get a ride. I thought they stopped just for me, but they stopped to stop the bus, to keep the bus from going on. Well, I opened the door, and she had a little dog in the back. It started yapping at me. And as I got in, I saw the front seat was empty, so I got in there, and he wasn't in there. She was behind the wheel. I thought, how could that happen? I just saw the two of them. Well, what happened, he got out on the traffic side and ran around the front of the car and ran into the bus. The dog was on my coat, and had to get my coat. And I said, "Well, thank you, Miss McKinnon. I have to get this bus, I guess." So I got out of the bus, and I was laughing all the time. I had to get out of the bus, and I got the bus. Of course, it was held back because of the car. And I got in the bus, and of course, told the story, and everybody was laughing. It was like an old comedy.
Doris.
Well, most of my experience, funny experiences, are with four-year-olds. And friends always tell me stories about their four-year-olds and their nephews and nieces who are four. This one friend was telling about her little nephew who kept saying damn all the time. And his parents did everything they could think of course, all the wrong things. I washed his mouth out with soap and threatened him. And finally, nothing worked. He just kept saying damn. And finally, his mother said, you know, we don't talk that way in our family. And if you insist on talking that way, you're just going to have to go live with somebody else. So he packed up his bag that he usually took with him to his grandmother's house and started out down the driveway. He got to the end of the driveway, set his suitcase down, and thought a minute. And of course, the father was watching him the whole time, wondering, ah, maybe he's thinking of this thing, and this is the thing that will turn him around and make him behave properly in our family. And he turned around all right. He came back to the house and rang the doorbell. So his father went to the door and he said, you know, Dad, I can't think of a damn place to go.
This is a true story. My uncle was a professor in organic chemistry at the University of Pittsburgh. And he'd never had much trouble with his teeth during his life, and when he was older, he finally started developing his toothache. And so he went to some friends and asked them if there was a dentist in town. And they told him of one, a younger doctor who had just moved in the area. So he went, and he was sitting in the chair, and the doctor was there poking around in his mouth, going, that's bad, you know, it really hurts. Oh, yeah. He's sitting there, and as the dentist is poking around, he kind of looks down at my nose and says, you don't remember me, do you? And he's sitting there, you gave me a bad time in organic.
I have a true dentist story that happened to me too. When I moved to Minnesota 5 years ago, I had a tooth break off just before I left, so I decided to go to the dentist school to have it repaired because I was a graduate student and I didn't have much money and that didn't cost so much. So I went and I had to have a gold crown put on it. And it takes 3 visits to get a gold crown put on your tooth. And the poor student, he worked 3 times and it didn't fit. So he had to start all over. And 3 more times and it didn't fit. And he had to start all over. 3 more visits and he got it to fit. And he just had it all ready and he was going to take it out to polish it and cement it into my mouth. And it slipped out of his fingers and I swallowed it. Couldn't find it. About a week later, he called me and asked me if I'd found it. And I said, no way. He started all over again, and he got it to fit, and I have to find gold.
Since Doris tells children's stories, I spent a year and a half as a house parent in a children's home. I could entertain people for weeks, I think, on some of the one-liners that I heard. But one child in particular, whose name was Junior, a little black child about 8 years old, happened to have no home to go to on Thanksgiving. So I brought he and another child with me to my church service in our church, which just about killed them because they're used to Catholic masses, which were 15 minutes long, designed for the children. And when they got to the end and the benediction was said, they said very loud and clear, my dad is the minister, it's about time that you're done. We took them home and we were sitting around in the living room talking after a huge Thanksgiving meal. We talked about birthdays and it turned out that one of the boys' birthday was the same day as my mother's. And my dad, without thinking, said, oh, that's the same day as my girlfriend's. Both the boys stopped dead and looked at my father, and my father instantly realized that for many of the children that I worked with, girlfriends of parents and boyfriends and aunts and uncles of all sorts were very common. So they went in, he explained that, oh, I mean my wife over there. And they said, so this guy Junior talked and he says to my mom, would you all be quitting on her, him, if he had a girlfriend? My mom says, well, my mom goes into about a 35-minute speech on how wonderful, you know, you know. They would sit down and talk it out and everything would be fine and dandy. And it got pretty heavy there for a few minutes, so my dad, to lighten things up, turned to Junior and said, well, what about you, Junior? Would you quit on her if you had her for a girlfriend? And he leans back and puts his hands in his pipe and says, well, with all this fine cooking that be around here today, you all be crazy if you quit on
it. Speaking of children, my own came up with one once. We have a tradition at Christmas where we go to church service first before they're allowed to open any of their presents. And sometimes when the church service, they go to the second one or something, it takes quite a while. And of course, you know how children are on Christmas morning. So one Christmas, as we were sitting there during the service, we were into the liturgy, and the children were old enough that they were getting into the liturgy, and I get this little note from my one son, and he says, I like the part in the liturgy that says, cast me not away from my presence.
I was on a trip to the Holy Land a few years ago, and if anybody has been there, they'll always tell you to have a drink or something because you can't have the water to kill the germs, you know. It was one of Dr. Callis's trips. So we were on the bus going along, and some of these people, you know, really hard-nosed about it, having anything to drink at all, and they just recommended it very highly each day to have something. So going along, and these two people were back there, and they were grumbling, you know, about having these drinks. And another couple was sitting there that was a pastor and his wife from Minnesota somewhere, and they heard these people a little bit later. They were discussing it, and he said, well, just like the old story back there in their church, this lady in church, and she didn't like the drinking either. And so the pastor said to her, well, even Jesus had drunk wine. And she says, yeah, you know, she says, and that's one thing I didn't like about him either.
I know that lady. Any others? Yeah.
Well, I don't. Maybe someone can tell it, but one of the best stories I ever heard in my life was around this fire last year on one of these evenings about a man trying to get off a train in New Jersey, and it was a friend of Larry Rasmussen's or Don's or someone. Does that ring any bells? Does anybody remember the tale?
I can try to tell it, but I'll probably get it wrong. I might not get it wrong. I just won't be able to embellish it, but. There's a friend, it may have been a Charlie Mays' friend, I'm not sure, but a friend who was a pastor and an lecturer, and he was staying with someone in northern New Jersey because he had some lecture to give. And the day before the lecture, which was an evening lecture, he went into New York City. He had some business to conduct there, and there was a train that went right through this northern New Jersey suburb. And so he looked up the schedule, and sure enough, the train stopped there at 8 o'clock in the morning and got him into Grand Central Station at, you know, 8:45, and got him downtown to do his business in New York City in plenty of time, which he proceeded to do. And that afternoon, he went back to Grand Central Station and got on the same train, same number, that he'd come in on that morning. And as he was getting close to this particular town, he asked the conductor, what time do we stop in, wherever, Tenafly or whatever. And the conductor said, oh, we don't stop there. He said, now wait a second, you stopped there this morning and picked me up, and I've got a lecture there this evening. The conductor said, I'm sorry, that's right. In the morning we stop there because this is a commuter train, but in the evening people often you get home in different ways, and there's just not enough business. We just don't stop there anymore. So the man insisted. He said, this is terribly important. These people have brought me straight out here from the Midwest or the West Coast to give this lecture, and I've got to be there. I've got to get off the train. Finally, the conductor said, well, I'll tell you. I'll help you with this problem, but you can't tell anybody about it. But when we go through the station, actually, we slow down to quite a slow speed. It's prohibited to get off the train at that point because there's some danger involved. But I'll tell you what. When we get to the station, you get your bag and you come down to the stairwell here. I'll open up the door, and at the appropriate time, I'll tell you to jump. And then you can just run along and go about your business. So they were pulling through the station. The train slowed down to 5-10 miles per hour, whatever it was. Got there with his satchel, holding on. Conductor said, now, I'll tell you what, when I say go, you just keep your legs going as fast as you can, because when you hit that walkway there's going to be a lot of momentum, and if you're not going as fast as you can, you're going to fall flat on your face and get hurt. So he said, okay. So finally, the guy tapped him on the shoulder and said, go! And he went going as fast as he could, and he jumped, and he hit the ground, and he was just going like crazy, and the train was pulling away from the station, and all at once, an enormous hand grabs him from behind and says, don't worry, mister, I got you. And goes back to the class, and I said, now who can name the five sex organs?
Feet out in the aisle and snuggled in, put my arm around Sandy and started checking out that flick. All of a sudden, And I realized that those shoulders were a bit broader than that. And I turned and looked, and here was this man. He was staring right at me. I thought you were my wife.
International Falls has you on the, I saw you in the post office. Time for a couple more.
I have a short one. My dad has a favorite joke. I shared it with him the other day when they were making lunch. You know what the honeymoon salad is?
Lettuce alone.
Lettuce alone. And the spring, of course, everything is beautiful in the spring. And one of the questions that our Sunday school class was, what did you see on your way to Sunday school this morning? It was beautiful. And this little boy thought for a while, and he said, a gopher in my trap. He was having gophers.
Well, we'll give you last word, Paul.
The lady over there, reminded me of some while ago. I'm doing, I guess the past year and a half, a while back, I'd been working as a 4-H county agent, and with them anyway, in the 4-H program in Georgia. And I really enjoyed it. I like working with youth and agriculture and everything. And one of the things we had to do is state, well, it didn't happen to me. But the man it did happen to, his expertise was in the area of beef cattle, you know. And that's mine too. So I was in there with him and we were just talking about how it has gone and how these demonstrations that we were at, a conference where 4-H'ers come and give their state demonstrations to, you know, and you judge them if they're in your field of expertise and you rank them according to how they do. And at the end of their demonstrations, then you bring them over and sit them down and you talk with them, you know, about the demonstration that they just gave. Well, he was talking about one time this little size fifth or sixth grader, 4-H'er, had been given a demonstration on internal parasites of beef cattle, you know, which is pretty relevant. And sometimes they say the word relevant. Relevant. Anyway, it's pretty relevant, you know. And but you could tell, and this is something that happens all the time too, when the county agent in that county has written a speech up for the little cloverleaf 4-H'er, and the 4-H'er may not know very much about what he's talking about. And the older man, gentleman, who was asking him the questions after the little child had already given the demonstration on internal parasites, the boy came over, sat down in the chair, and Dr. Dan said, now, what exactly is an internal parasite? And the boy thought for a minute and he said, I think it's something that lives forever.
Go ahead.
And don't really think that we change much. Well, a few years ago, as I was reaching the milestone or approaching the milestone of my 40th birthday,
And my son and I were talking after dinner quietly together. And suddenly he paused and looked at me and he said, "Mom, what are those ditches under your eyes?"
Then
what happened?
Hans, go ahead.
Okay. Personal story. Years ago, when I was a vicar in New York, I had to preach downtown and had to get there for an early service. So I left uptown New York really early, nobody on the freeways. And so I was tipping along in my little VW. I think at a pretty good speed, like about 50 miles an hour. It was a 30 mile an hour area, but not a car in sight, not even the police cars, so of course I was wrong. But there was another ramp coming from the George Washington Bridge. I was going along the Harlem River like this, and the police car was coming down that ramp like that, and just picked me up as I was coming around the corner. But my dad had always said, you know, if you ever get picked up on the street, you just hop out of your car right away and greet them at their door before they have to get out to sort of greet you at your door. So I got out there, and Mark's story about the clerical collar or the reference that made me think of this. And I just happened to have the clerical collar on, and I just happened to have my coat open when the clerical collar would show, and he was pulling out his book and was ready to turn over. And he was a black policeman, gray, big man. And he looked over, and he saw me, and he saw my clerical collar, and he put his book down, and he looked back at me again, and a huge grin from ear to ear. "Oh, it's you, Father. Be my guest." And he escorted me all the way down to where I had to get to a turnoff because I wasn't sure where to go.
Anyone just dying to share one more before we close up? Anyone who's wanted to get one in?
Maybe an extension on the honeymoon salad. The way I heard it, it was lettuce alone with no dressing.
I think we'd better close with it. Thank you.